Oh, God!
It's got a wonderful defense mechanism. You don't dare kill it.
You admire it.
I admire its purity.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Rewind. I'm your host, Travis.
I'm X.
And thank you once again for tuning in. And on the show, you know, we like to do several different things, talk about different topics in genres and movies and in franchises. We have covered quite a big franchises in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And not too long ago, something came up in the news and we just decided, hey, this is maybe this might be a good time to cover something. And what it is the actual Alien movie franchise.
You can't see me. I'm doing a badass alien impersonation.
Yeah, bad is right. So,
in my head, it looks really alien.
It's alien, all right. So, no, but tell the good listeners here why this came up in discussing.
Well, it was months ago.
Yeah.
A new Alien movie was going to be in the works, and it was going to be directed by Neil Blomkamp.
Yes.
Guy who directed District 9,
mm-hmm.
and Elysium. And Chappie. But District 9 was so good, right? We all loved it. But the point is, this guy's a heavy sci-fi director.
Right.
But the thing that really got people on board is he tweeted.
Yes.
He tweeted a few pictures and the thing is, he was going to pull a kind of what Bryan Singer did with Superman Returns.
Yeah.
He was going to make a Superman sequel jumping off of Superman Part 2 and just say, forget 3 and 4 ever happened.
Yes.
And he was actually going to literally do that. He was going to jump in after Part 2
mm-hmm.
and say, forget 3 and 4 ever happened. He was going to include Michael Biehn
mm-hmm.
and Sigourney Weaver. And
everybody was happy with this.
He tweeted some concept art, and everybody was on board. And people were excited. Oh, my God, Alien, the way the aliens we wanted.
As opposed to
where the franchise went.
I think it was the concept art of Hicks. I think that's what got everybody.
Hicks?
Yeah.
He's all, like, burned on the side of his face. He looks like James Franco in Spider-Man 3, but awesome. And then Ridley Scott, who had already done Prometheus at mm-hmm. the time, was going to revisit the Prometheus universe. And Ridley Scott, I made no secrets about this. I'm not the hugest fan of Ridley Scott. And he kind of was like, I don't want anybody else to play in my sandbox.
That's what it felt like.
Well, I'm playing in here in the sandbox. And he kind of decided to take his Prometheus sequel, make it much more... Because people hated... Well, we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. But the point is, I don't want to say he pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe indirectly, maybe by no fault of his own, I don't know. But he kind of... Point is, Neil Blomkamp has since moved on to another project. Ridley's Alien project is still a go.
Right, because it's originally going to be a... Well, I think it's still going to be a Prometheus sequel, but now he changed the name from Prometheus to Alien Covenant.
It was going
to
be like Prometheus Paradise Lost or something, now it's Alien Covenant, because I guess the studio is like, we need Alien in there. People are confused.
Like, you wanted to come back, so you're going to...
There's a lot going on there. We'll get into that when we cover Prometheus.
But here's what we're going to do in this particular episode. We're going to cover the original quadrilogy.
Quadrilogy. First time I've heard that word.
Yeah. It's been marketed like that on DVDs and shit.
No, I mean, but Alien taught me the word quadrilogy.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we're going to come back in the next episode after this, and we'll be covering... You don't even tell them?
We have to, but yeah.
Okay.
it's technically Alien.
It is. Alien versus Predator. Excuse me, AVP. and then Requiem after that.
Yeah.
And then Prometheus.
And then we're going to top it all off with Prometheus, and you're going to want to stick around for that one, because I got... I'm biting my tongue just right now.
I've seen the notes. It's pretty detailed.
Yeah. I got some shit to drop. I got some knowledge to drop. I'm going to drop some knowledge on you.
If you thought... our Dark Knight episode was something. Wait till you hear this one. Before we get into that, I just do again thank you for everyone for tuning in. You can find us, if you haven't, tell your friends. Find us Pop Culture Rewind on iTunes. Give us a rate and review on that. We'd love to hear feedback on that. Also on the Stitcher Radio app for your Android devices. Also follow us on social media at facebook.com/popculturerewind and follow us on Twitter at popculturerwnd. And you can find all our episodes through popculturerewind.com.
Yeah, and write us in, write a review. You know, yeah, give us some feedback. I love hearing these feedbacks, and I'd love to ask us some questions. We'll reply to them on the air on the next episode, like we're live. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, be a part of it.
You know, we also have a YouTube channel. Search for Pop Culture Rewind. The reason I brought that up because we've been getting some comments on some, you know, one or two of our videos that we put up, which is just more. It's our episodes that we're recording, but we put some video cues in there, if you will, to go along with what we're saying. So those are fun to do. So give us a thumbs up on those videos, too.
Yeah. Be a part of it. Okay. So I guess start at the beginning.
Alien.
Who the fuck says it like that? Alien. Yeah. Alien. It's 1979 film. 1979, fuck. These things go back to the 70s.
It's older than us.
It's a very long-running franchise, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, directed by Ridley Scott, written by Dan O'Bannon.
Dan O'Bannon wrote this movie. Now, before writing this movie, he wrote a sci-fi movie called Dark Star, a college film.
Yes.
If you ask him, he'll say it was a college film, never meant to be. If you ask him, he'll say it was a comedy. he managed to get another guy in college at the time to direct, a guy named John Carpenter.
Yes.
It's a funny movie to watch because it's so cheesy.
It's not funny because it's supposed to be funny.
Well, he says it was supposed to be funny.
Oh, really?
That's the stance he's... Like Nicolas Cage has since said, Wicker Man was supposed to be funny. Come on, Nick. We know it wasn't. I don't know if he's just backpedaling or if he really intended it and John took it in a serious route.
You can actually, on that particular movie, you can actually go on IMDb. There's a little trailer for it. That's all you need to do is just click, watch the trailer.
For Dark Star? But it's a sci-fi movie. They're in space. An alien gets on board. An alien that's basically a beach ball.
Yeah.
So the point is, the movie was not very well received. A lot of people didn't get it. I think a lot of people today still don't get it. I don't get it. But it's a John Carpenter movie, so I gave it a go. So after that, he tried sci-fi again, but rather than trying comedy, he tried to go basically straight horror.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sci-fi movie, clearly, but I think it's really more like a horror movie that just happens to be in space.
And if you're not familiar with the name Dan O'Bannon, you might be familiar with some of his other work later on. Total Recall, Life Force, Return...
Some badass sci-fi movies.
Return of the Living Dead, and he did one of the shorts, or one of the stories for Heavy Metal.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I don't know that. Yeah, he took the story to the producer Ron Shusett at the time, and in that same meeting they were talking about let's make Alien. They also decided in the exact same meeting they were born at the same time. Total Recall took more than a decade to get off the ground, but they both eventually did get together and write 1990s Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger,
yeah.
Not the
11 years later.
There's been a new Total Recall with Colin Farrell that came out a few years back.
Yeah.
Not that one.
Yeah.
Not that one. Fuck that movie. Total Recall, the original, is awesome.
Yeah. But I think for this particular movie, Alien, it's... For 1979, it did break a lot of ground. And even... It's so iconic.
It was. Yeah, it is.
So iconic.
I keep saying this with this tone.
even the tagline, in space, no one can hear you scream.
That's good, dude. That's good. Whoever wrote that, they nailed it.
Yeah. Hope they got a raise.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie, real quick, I just want to throw this out here, 8.5 on IMDb, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a beloved franchise.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make the next few minutes very hard for me.
Oh, no. Well, let's, before we get into that, because I know what you're going to do here.
I'm going to do what I do.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it do what I do, baby.
You can keep it real. All right. This was obviously the introduction to the universe that's throughout the whole franchise, pretty much. You know, there's a lot of... Everything was introduced, you know, in this one movie. Case in point, we're going to get this later on, but, you know, things like the company and xenomorphs and the facehuggers, all this other stuff, this was all introduced here in this one movie. So that's why it's so classic, I don't know, for this particular thing.
All I'm hearing is if you want to visit the saga so you can get to the good movies, you kind of got to watch this one. That's what I'm...
Well, yeah, that's if you want to see where it all started.
I mean, it's a good movie, and it's 1979, and it, you know, I've said this before, judging a movie outside the context of its time, at the time it was groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
I watched 2001 Space Odyssey, I'm sorry, it bores me, but I get that in the 60s, that was amazing shit.
Yeah.
But I didn't see that movie until 30 years after it came out. Same thing with this. I was always aware of it. I would see pieces of it here and there on TV or whatever when I was a kid, but I never sat down from start to finish and gave it a proper go until, like, my late teens.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Way after I already watched maybe all the other three movies. I think I was so into the Alien franchise, I kind of wanted to finally give the first go its due diligence and sit through it.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm watching it, like, almost 20 years after it came out. So putting that out there, okay. To be fair.
Yeah. I'm pretty much the same way. Obviously, I didn't watch it when I was a kid. I mean, so
yeah. I mean, like the movie opens. It's kind of like Spaceballs, a long drawn out shot of the ship. Whereas Spaceballs is being funny, they're satirizing it. Aliens being very earnest. Let's just slowly walk you through this spaceship for like 5 minutes.
Give you a layout of the ship and everything. And
yeah. Well, I mean, they're really establishing the setting because the whole movie takes place on this ship.
Yeah.
And a big part of the horror, because I think it's more horror than sci-fi.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Is the claustrophobia. Mm-hmm. We are trapped on this ship with this alien. There's no way to get off. We're stuck here. So they're really establishing it. And I get it. Mm-hmm. Ridley Scott's a good director. He's not much of a writer. And I don't think he would know a good script if it fell out of the sky, landed on his face, and started to wiggle. But, I mean, Like, he makes good movies, but it kind of is all dependent on whether or not it's a good script.
Yeah.
Because if it's a bad script and Ridley directs it, it'll look nice, but it won't work. I think he's like 50-50, to be honest.
Some of his movies for Ridley Scott, to me, they are kind of boring.
Yeah.
Martian was a good movie.
It's like a coin toss with this dude.
Yeah, it is. No, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
In my opinion, like, Counselor, everybody hated that, you know. He makes good movies here and there. I thought Black Hawk Down was really good. I enjoyed Magic Man. Thelma Louise is a classic. He's got good movies. Don't get me wrong. I don't hate Ridley Scott, but
I'm sorry. I don't know where you stand on this, but to me, I don't understand the cult classic vibe or whatever of Blade Runner. Like I've tried watching that. I've tried sitting out, and I've watched it. I have watched Blade Runner, but I just don't like.
Okay, Blade Runner, when did you watch that for the first time ever? Because that's a movie that came out in like 82.
Yeah.
So, is this like a similar thing? We just watched
it 20 years later, yeah.
Okay.
I was in my 20s probably when I saw it.
I didn't see Blade Runner until the late 90s myself. And I'm kind of with you on that one. I didn't see the big... I spent all my life, I've heard this genius movie.
That's all we heard growing up. All the different re-releases, the director's cut,
yeah, special a lot edition of versions.
Cut. Like, how many different cuts and things of this thing have there been that's released? It's ridiculous. So I thought it was some kind of, you know, spectacular movie. It's just... I don't know.
Okay, we're kind of on board on Ridley, yeah. We got a lot to get through.
Yes.
So, like I said, we got the established shot of the ship and all the crew members, like seven characters, if I recall. Seven characters, seven actors, this entire movie. It's an easy movie to follow. It's like Predator. It got seven people. And this was one of Sigourney's very early movies. Mm-hmm. She had not done a whole lot. This was one of her very early movies. And I don't think Fox at the time didn't really think much about sci-fi movies in general.
Yeah,
and then Star Wars comes out, and Fox is like, "Okay, we'll throw our hat in the sci-fi ring," but they didn't expect much from it, so they casted, you know, some young up and comers. Ridley had only done like one movie; I think he had only done The Duelist at the time. So Ridley was kind of fairly young. Dan O'Bannon's last movie had bombed, you know. Nobody was expecting this to become what it was.
Yeah,
nobody saw this coming. So the basic plot of the movie is it's in the future. It takes place in like 21 something or other. Fuck, I can't remember the year. It's in the future. But it's in the future where everybody dresses like they're in the 70s. You know?
It's amazing.
No, it's funny. And they're part of a mining crew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, they just go to other planets and random moons, and they just mine ore. And that's their job. They're blue-collar guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I like the camaraderie that the crew has with each other. They're chilling, and they're blue-collar, and they're smoking cigarettes, and it's a cool vibe. But this movie takes place in the year 2137. And they're on this spaceship, the Nostromo, and they're awakened from hypersleep, because that's what you do. You sleep when you're in space. In space, no one can hear you sleep. And they get, like, a distress signal. And they work for this company called Weyland-Yutani. which is going to become a big bad, if you will.
And I think in this movie, we don't even...
Did they say Weyland Yutani?
It was just, they've only referred to it as the company.
The company.
Yeah.
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 So they get a distress signal from some random uncharted moon saying that we're getting a distress signal. And it's company policy that if you get a distress signal, you were like legally obligated to go down there and scope it out.
Yeah.
Most of the crew is like, fuck, I'm a miner. Yeah, I'm not getting paid for this. Yeah. Yaphet Kotto's in this, Harry Dean Stanton. And they're like, I'm not going down there. And if you want to give us more money, I'll go down there. But if you're not, fuck it. But they go down there because they're required to.
I better get paid. Fuck that, we getting paid.
Yeah. So they go down to this uncharted planet called LV-426.
Mm-hmm.
And then they find this derelict spacecraft. It looks like a giant horseshoe. It's really cool. They go into it. They find what has since become in pop culture is called the space jockey.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a gigantic humanoid person sitting in at like at the helm or like at a cockpit. We don't know. He's just kind of sitting there at this gigantic machine.
Yeah.
And
looks like a giant cannon or something.
It looks like that. Yeah. That's why I was talking. And we say he's giant. They built the set, but they wanted the set to be giant. So to save money, they put, I think, was it Ridley himself who put his own children in spacesuits and filmed them in their spacesuits to basically double the size of the set at no cost. It's kind of ingenious. This is before digital technology.
I was about to say, that's the thing about before digital technology was you had to think, like, how can we make this work?
Mm-hmm.
And there you go.
So it's basically like a 15-foot tall, the space jockey. And the captain of the ship, a character named Dallas, played by Tom Skerritt, notices that his chest is burst open. It looks like it's been torn from the inside out.
Yeah.
So they're still walking along, and the Exo, Kane, his name is Kane.
John Hurt, right?
Played by John Hurt, yeah. He comes across a bunch of eggs.
Well, it's like this weird, like...
It's like a force field, but not really. Something.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like. It's a weird effect that they used.
Yeah, it's like a lighting effect that you just walk through, but he walks through it. And these eggs, which are basically hibernating, one of them opens up.
Well, he gets like he notices
and like that, a fucktard.
Well, he notices. he looks down on it.
He sees
it
moving.
Yeah, he sees something moving on the inside, and even more of a reason not to look at it even closer. but yeah, he kind of.
But the egg opens up, and like rare something jumps out and jumps on his face.
Yeah, it made a sound effect too.
Yeah. So the crew, they're hauling Kane's body back to the ship. And they're like, let us in. And Ripley, Ellen Ripley.
Yes.
Lieutenant Ellen Ripley, played by Sigourney Weaver, is no, you're not bringing this ship.
I like the scene.
She's like, no, there's the quarantine rules. You are not bringing a contagion onto this ship. And her boss, the captain, she's like, I'm overriding you. Open up the door. She's like, no, I'm not. She's firm in her belief. She's a strong character. Unfortunately, there's a science officer on board, played by Ian Holm, Bilbo Baggins. If you a lot of shit he's done. He overrides. He opens the door because he's a science officer. He wants to see this fucking alien. So they bring Kane on board with this.
Well, he doesn't know it's up. He doesn't know it's an alien. Yeah.
But so they bring Kane. So they bring Kane with this. It's called a face hugger.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically this alien hugging his face, and his tail is wrapped around his throat. They're trying to pull it off. It won't come off. They try to yank it off. No. They try and cut it off with a laser. Mm-hmm. They cut one of his little arms off. It starts to bleed acid.
Yeah.
It falls on the ground. It bleeds to the lower deck. Yaphet Kotto is like, it's a great defense mechanism. You don't dare kill it. Acid for blood.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing. We're talking about establishing things. Establishing facehuggers. Establishing acid blood. Establishing eggs.
Facehuggers.
Because there's a whole mythology. Yeah. So they decide to head home. Eventually, the alien, the facehugger, they couldn't get it off. It seems to fall off on its own and die, and Kane seems fine.
For a little while.
So we're heading home. We're getting ready to take a big cryo sleep nap and head home. But before we do, let's have one last dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting around the dinner table, they're having a good time. They're smoking cigarettes. It's a good time. And all of a sudden, Kane starts to flip the fuck out.
Yeah.
He's got, like, indigestion like crazy. Somebody get this guy some Pepto-Bismol! Water my ass! So he falls on his back onto the table, and we get one of the most iconic scenes in sci-fi horror history ever, dude.
Yeah.
with the chest burster, as it's been since called.
Well, we see like a bulge or something at first, you know, and then you see red on his shirt.
He's got red on you.
Yeah. And then, bam, it it's
called a chest burster for a reason.
There you go, yeah.
It's burst out of his chest, this little fucking monster. Yaphet Kotto grabs a little plastic picnicware butter knife. Like, that's going to do jack shit. And he just scurries off the table and sings, "Hello, my baby, hello, my honey." No, it doesn't.
You know, I'm glad you said that because, like, even more iconic than this scene, I think Spaceballs.
I saw Spaceballs first.
Oh, okay.
Okay, right, yeah. So I saw Spaceballs first, in which John Hurt, the same actor, plays that scene. He reenacts the scene. He even looks at his burst out chest like, "Oh no, not again." And then he puts the little top hat on. "Hello, my baby," dances away. So when I saw it proper in Alien, it didn't do much for me because I had like a decade of laughing at it.
I wish that I could see that for the first time, like not knowing anything else.
In the 70s, I can only imagine what the audience did at the time. They were probably puking and screaming and just losing their shit.
Yeah,
I recognize it's a great scene, but I'm sorry, I lost it. it was lost on me rather. So this alien escapes. We're down one crew member. That's one down. Everybody's figuring out how to kill this thing. Ian Holm, the science officer, is still admiring it. I don't know. There's something off about how he's approaching this whole scenario.
He's calm about the whole situation.
It's a little too calm.
Yeah,
he's a little too raff.
Yeah. Thank you.
So they build some motion detectors. They build some weapons, some flamethrowers. I don't want to walk you through this whole movie too much.
Because at this point, it's them hunting down.
And it's a slasher movie. The call's coming from inside the house. From an alien who has a phone. One by one, it just starts ticking them off. Yeah. People keep dying. Dark corridors, whatever. We get Dallas, the captain, Tom Skerritt. They think it's in the air vents.
Right.
So he...
The ventilation shafts.
Yeah. So he's got his little... He goes into it. And this is a scene that's been spoofed in other movies. Simpsons made fun of it, you know, they're tracking the alien, they're tracking him, and we see the map, and it's coming up behind you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Tom Skerritt's like, where, I don't see it. He turns to the left, and then you get a shot of the alien. The alien throws its arms out like, "I want to give you a big, big hug."
Yeah,
and it's supposed to be really scary, but again, I saw this years ago. I saw this with a chick, and we kind of laughed. It was funny, and then it became a running gag between me and her of always turning the corner and putting our arms out like, but it was just, "Give me a hug." It became cute. This thing that's supposed to be really scary, you watch it 20 years later, it became a running gag of how cute it is, of like, "Give me a hug."
And that's the thing about this movie, as great and classic as what this movie represents and is, a lot of this stuff I don't think really holds up.
Okay, thank you. I've been wondering when to drop this bomb. It doesn't hold up to me.
The two biggest effects, or what we just examples, or what we just said. That scene of he just jumps out of the corner. That's one. And then even the chest burster where he's on the table and he runs across, he scurries across the table.
It's clearly like on a track, or somebody's pulling it with a rope, and
it's like the shark in Jaws 3. Like,
it's just moving. It's just moving too much in a straight line.
Yeah, those two things are the biggest examples I could think of, but I'm sure there's other ones too. But there's the alien in this movie. There's only, I think, about 4 minutes of screen time.
Okay, the alien at this point, this alien has grown in like 12 hours. It's grown from like the size of a puppy to like
a dude
bigger than a person.
Yeah,
like way bigger. And it was a guy in a suit. I mean, he kind of crawls on all fours. It's kind of quadrupedal, but not really. You know, it has arms and shit. But I mean, the alien itself, the design of the alien, we haven't talked about this. Again, really had nothing to do with this before he even joined the project. I think it was Dan O'Bannon who approached this Swiss artist. He was a surrealist named H.R. Giger.
Is it Giger or Geiger?
I've heard both. Yeah. I've always called him Giger. I don't know. I've heard both.
It sounds more foreign, right?
I'll go with, I don't know, whatever. So Giger, if you looked at any of his art, he basically, he kind of already had it.
Yeah.
He already had the alien design. He has this beautiful painting. I think it's called Necronomicon 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think is what his title, and it's basically of the alien. It's very sleek, it's very phallic, yet kind of feminine too. He's a beautiful artist. His work is beautiful.
It's very detailed. Surreal. Yeah,
it's very sexual. Mm-hmm. He's an amazing artist. He's since passed away, but there's a lot of great art that this guy has done. H.R. Giger. So yes, he designed the facehugger. He designed the alien, the sleek, sexy kind of phallic head he's got. That's all him. So that's the alien. Anyway, like we keep ticking down the characters.
Well, the xenomorph.
The xenomorph is, I think they've... Did they call him that in this movie?
No.
Is that established yet?
No, they don't... No.
I didn't get a chance to rewatch... I did sort of rewatch this like over a month ago, but I kind of had it on in the background.
They don't call it a xenomorph because they don't even know what the hell it is.
Yeah, I wasn't paying close attention.
But later on, it's, you know, xenomorph is... I mean, this is what it's always been known as to me, xenomorph.
So, yeah, ticking down, Yaphet Kotto dies, the chick, Lambert, who's freaking out the whole time, "It's gonna kill us! Just fucking die, Lambert." She dies, Yaphet Kotto, who I like, he dies, Harry Dean Stanton doesn't die, he gets, like, kidnapped. So the crew's running down. Actually, Yaphet Kotto's not dead yet. But, yeah. Ian Holm. What's it? Ash. Dallas dies, mm-hmm. Ridley becomes the next command. Mm-hmm. So she goes to the cockpit. There's, like, this AI that runs the whole ship. They call it Mother. She types in her access code, and she realizes that they had actual orders mm-hmm. from the company to go there.
Yeah.
Not like we were we're forced to go there. But no, the company basically said, "You're going there." It was their plan all along. Mm-hmm. The company mm-hmm. sent them there. And she's like, "Oh!" And then Ash just kind of creeps up out of her shoulder like a ninja.
He was, like, nowhere, like, out of nowhere. Like, the camera just pans back. Just
yeah,
just
like fucking right ninja Ash is like, "Well, now you know the whole story." And he starts trying to kill her. He, like, shoves a magazine down her throat, and he's suffocating
very
her.
Awkward.
He's fucking Jason Bourne. He's killing her with a magazine. And then Yaphet Kotto, like, gets a fire extinguisher and, like, boom, knocks his head off. Literally. His head knocks off and is dangling, and he starts fucking doing the twist. He's losing his shit, and he's white underneath. And we realize he's a robot. He's an android.
Yes,
he's not human.
Again, I kind of wish I saw this before I knew
androids were an established thing. In the universe, because every alien movie has an android or a synthetic or whatever you call
them. I prefer synthetic.
Yeah, so they knock. I prefer the term artificial person myself. So turns out Ash Ian Holm is an android. So his head. He's a disembodied head, so they're carrying him around like Reanimator. They plug him back in.
Another effect that does not hold up over time at all. Oh, the cut between the prop to
his looks
head.
So fake, and then when he activates and it's clearly his body is underneath the table.
Oh my goodness, that was terrible.
Yeah, but it's the '70s.
So. Yeah, I know, but still, like, I don't know. Okay. So
they wake up Ash and they question him and they're like, "Ash, da fuck."
That's in the uncut version.
And he says, like, the company told us, and, you know, he tells them. I don't know. It's a good speech. I wish I had memorized it better, but he says, like, I can't lie to you about your chances. You're probably going to die.
Yeah.
And they're like, "You admire it." He goes, I admire its purity. Point is, so they blowtorch him.
Yeah. As one would do.
As one is wont to do.
Yeah.
So only a few people left.
But this is the first time, or obviously, but about knowing that the company is wanting to get a hold of these.
They want them some aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a recurring theme throughout.
Very much so.
Everything. Yeah.
So, basically everybody dies. Except Ripley.
Yeah.
She's about to get the fuck out of Dodge. She's going to get into the little life craft, the EEV, whatever, and just get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And as she's carrying her blowtorch. Now, there's two versions of this movie. There's a theatrical cut and the director's cut.
Right.
And for the most part, they're almost identical, minus one 3-minute scene. It's very small, but it kind of changes the whole dynamic of the franchise if you look at it a certain way.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to get back to that scene because it kind of contradicts what happens in the next movie.
Okay.
But we'll address this. We're gonna put a pin in that. We're going to get back to that.
Okay.
Because James Cameron technically contradicts what this scene establishes, but because it was deleted and it wasn't released until 2003, after Aliens, the sequel, had already come out, technically James wasn't stepping on Ridley's shoes, Fuck it, I'm telling you the scene. Ridley's going through the bowels of the ship, and she finds out that Dallas and Harry Dean Stanton, I forget his name, are still alive, but they're cocooned. Yes. They're completely cocooned, and all you see basically is Dallas's face, and he's like, kill me. And we realize he's being turned into an egg.
Is that what it was?
That's what is going on. It turns out people are appropriated to become eggs. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. But this is in the director's cut.
This is in the director's cut that wasn't released until 2003.
Okay.
Before this, Ridley just goes to the ship and gets the fuck out of here. But so Dallas is like, kill me. Ripley burns them all with her blowtorch and gets the fuck out of Dodge. It's a weird scene. Anyways. But point is, at this point, that is not considered canon.
Okay.
Because that will come up. So Ripley gets on her spaceship with her cat. By the way, she has a cat.
Jones.
Jonesy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She flies away. She blows up the ship?
Yeah. Does that happen? Self-destruct.
Because everything has a self-destruct function.
Yeah.
Why would you ever build a self-destruct function? In case an alien gets on board? I mean...
I know worst case scenario is, but yeah, like what?
I don't know why, but the point is she figures out somehow to blow up the ship. She gets away in her little spacecraft. She's putting the captain's log, Stardate, whatever, with her cat. She's about to get in the cryosleep before she strips down to her 1970s undies, which are kind of hot, but they're kind of, they're just like straight, completely flat. You could put a level on there and the bubble would be right in the middle. You know?
So dated.
You could put a marble right on her undies and it would not roll either way. She got those flat undies.
Yeah.
She's got a flat 70s butt.
They had to put pasties on her nipples so they wouldn't, her nipples wouldn't show on her shirt.
She's wearing like a little tidy white t-shirt. Yeah. It's kind of hot, actually. But because it's Sigourney Weaver. She's about to crawl into bed, in space bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then like... The alien is fucking on her ship.
Yeah, she sees him in a crevice of the wall. Yeah. And she's like, because you don't see it until he moves his arm. Which that's kind of creepy, you know?
It's kind of cool. Yeah, it can camouflage! Or whatever. So she backs up against the wall. The alien doesn't kill her.
Yeah.
Whatever. So very slowly, she one leg into a spacesuit.
Hmm.
Next leg, put it in the spacesuit. Zip up the space. She dons this whole spacesuit while the alien is just basically watching her.
Hmm.
And then she starts
typing. Was he asleep or something? Like, why did he...
I don't know. Like, it saw her. Like, flinched.
Yeah.
It flinched when it saw her, but whatever. She crawls into the spacesuit, dons a helmet, grabs, like, a little harpoon gun while she has a harpoon gun in space. What are you doing with the gun in space? She like, opens the airlock, and the alien, like, gets sucked out, and it's like grabbing edges of the doors, not wanting to get sucked out. She harpoons its ass, sends it flying, closes the door, but it is still attached to the harpoon.
Right.
And then we get a wide shot from the outside of the full alien, and it's very clearly a human in an alien costume, just kind of floating in space, not moving. Looks a little silly. But it starts to crawl back into the ship through the exhaust, and that's when really hits the NOS. And it burns its ass out of the airlock.
And, what was that NOS?
And she just... And then she goes to cryosleep and basically says, "This is Stardate, Captain's Log. This is Ripley, the last survivor of the Nostromo, signing off." Mm-hmm. And the movie kind of ends.
Yep. That's pretty much it on that movie. One last thing I wanted to point out or mention something I heard about this movie was Dan O'Bannon. We mentioned he's the writer of this movie. He actually had Ridley Scott sit down and with the producers, and they watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Before they started the production of this.
Really?
Yeah. To prepare shooting the intense scenes of some of the alien stuff. And Ridley Scott actually came out and admitted that it motivated him to amp up the intensity of the movie.
Now, you say that. Like, Texas Chainsaw is intense. That first movie? It's hardcore, dude.
Yeah.
And this one, like I said, it's almost the alien looks cuddly. Like, I want to give it a hug. And it goes, rare! Like... I want to hug the alien. That's my takeaway from it. I want to give it a hug. Leatherface, I want to run the fuck away from him.
Well, that's just through the course of time. That's probably what happened.
Or Ridley failed.
Probably.
Yeah. No, but I mean, public opinion says otherwise. I know I'm in the minority here. This is, 97% or something like that? Like, yeah, people hail this as one of the greatest sci-fi horrors, sci-fi movies. It did start a big franchise. Everything... Nobody ever has anything to say. So when you think about it, I'm kind of a brave American hero. You know, I don't like to use the word hero a lot, but I will. You know, for condemning this movie. No, I'm not condemning it. You know what? I don't even know where
you heard it here.
I don't know where the fuck I was going
with that. You heard it here first. We said the movie doesn't. The effects don't hold up.
Oh. I don't like to call myself a hero. I like to let other people call me that. So feel free to write in and tell me I'm a hero.
Popculturerewind at gmail.com, right?
For not loving. For just not getting Alien. But yes, 20 years. This movie was like 20 years old by the time I really, really gave it a proper go. Mm-hmm. But.
And like you said, it's been satirized and parodied and everything
else. Yeah, so much. But yeah. But we're not all about the negative.
Well,
about the franchise at all. No,
that's strong coming from you.
No, I do love things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we're gonna fast forward a few years. It's 1986.
Yes,
80s, 80s movies, 80s action, 80s mentality, all that. The 80s, go go 80s. Yeah, doing coke, everything. We're in the 80s.
Yeah.
And then a young director named James Cameron.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, I just a little bit of pre-cum already at the name, just the sound of his name. He is given the reins to make a sequel to this
perfect
film.
Fit. Yes,
perfect fit. Yeah. Now, whereas Alien, as we just said, is more of a horror movie, this they went balls out action.
Yeah, they did.
This is a straight up action movie. You know, but a little bit some sci-fi. It's an action sci-fi. A little bit of horror too. 1986 is Aliens. Okay, my God, if you didn't enjoy the first fight, oh my God, get ready for me to just jizz all over fucking this movie. I fucking love Aliens.
This is my favorite one of the whole series.
Easily, if it's not your favorite one, just fuck it. No,
I don't want to be friends with you.
I don't want to be your friend. Yeah.
I don't want you in my life.
Yeah, it was produced by Gail Ann Hurd, who's still working. She's producing Walking Dead right now. She's exactly. I think she's.
Terminator 2?
Yeah. I think she's James Cameron ex-wife number 2.
Something like that. I lost track
of. Or 5. I forget. I'm losing track of his ex-wives.
Yeah. But it's not about that.
I'd marry him if he asked me to. Fucking James Cameron. Just so I can know what happens in the next Avatar. Okay. So, yeah. Point is, okay, we're on board with this movie, obviously. Maybe we shouldn't have opened
but
up.
Check this out, though.
With so much but dick check sucker. This out. I think I hurt my arm jerking this movie off.
Yeah. Pretty disgusting. All right, so the first one, interesting enough, it was rated 8.5 on IMDb. This one, 8.4 on IMDb. But this one has a higher rating on Rotten Tomato. This is 98%
Rotten Tomato. Yeah, IMDb ratings. Do you ever go on those message boards? You know the kind of people who are on IMDb? Yeah,
assholes.
Yeah. Fucking cock knockers. A lot of them. I guess I'm myself included. Okay, so the movie opens where the last one left off. Ripley and Jonesy, they're in cryosleep. They're aboard the EEV, I guess, of the Nostromo, and they're discovered by a deep space salvage crew. So they haul her back to space, whatever, and then we meet a character named Carter Burke,
mm-hmm.
played by Paul Reiser. Mm-hmm. If you ever saw Mad About You or anything, you know who Paul Reiser was. And he basically represents the company.
He's the company man
in this movie. And then we get Weyland Yutani. We get that name. That's the name of the company. And
we finally see the actual name on some boxes and things like that.
It's like a logo and everything. Yeah. And he breaks the news to her that she's been floating out there for 57 years.
Say what?
57 years. It's a nice round number.
Yes.
Which places this movie in the year 2194 for you at home keeping track. And by the way, we should say I revisited these movies, all of them. They all have a director's cut, more or less.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah, there's one wonderful scene right after the same scene that they're talking about. It's been 57 years, and he's trying to update, you know, Ripley on everything that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
We discover in the special edition that she had a daughter before she left. She was what, 11 years old,
something like that.
Yeah,
57, 66, 67. Yeah, so yeah,
okay. Yeah, so. And she finds out that she had already passed away.
Like 2 years ago.
Yeah, so she died at 66 years old or something like that. No grandchildren. Like no
didn't have any no progeny whatsoever. No. Yeah.
And the reaction that Sigourney Weaver does to find out.
It's kind of silent. She isn't really like, oh, no, whatever. Yeah. It's kind of all
she just puts
quiet.
Her hand on a picture of her.
He shows her a picture of her daughter who's an old woman.
Already an old woman.
Who's
think of the mindfuck of that, man.
Yeah. Fun bit of trivia, that woman was actually Sigourney Weaver's mother.
Was it?
So that's why it looks looks a little Sigourney-ish.
Yeah.
She's a little bit of Weaver in her, yeah.
But anyway, the thinking about that, like, what would that do to someone's...
But the addition of that scene, that we find out that she has a daughter who's died, kind of comes back. Mm. That scene has a payoff. And when you think about the fact that the theatrical movie didn't, that it lost that scene, it's a good scene.
Yeah, it's a good scene.
But it does come back, and you wonder why of all the scenes that they took that one out. So we get a shot of Ripley is talking to Weyland Yutani board members, and she's explaining why she blew up the ship and why, because of the alien. And she's breaking it down, and all of them, they don't believe her. Mm. They're like, an alien with acid for blood. These are your words. Nobody's what she's selling, they ain't buying. So they take her license away. She's not a flight officer anymore. And she says, like, hey, why don't you just go to LV-426 and see for yourself? And they say, why? We've had people terraforming that planet for years, 60 or 70 families, and we've had no problems. So fuck off.
That was in the uncut version also.
Yeah. Then we get another deleted scene that actually takes place on LV-426. And we see a bunch of crew members and one guy says, hey, I got an order from deep space that says I'm supposed to... He's from New York, I guess. I'm supposed to send a crew to go after these coordinates. Oh! Because Andrew Dice Clay apparently is working on this.
Clearly.
Jack and Jill went down a hill. Oh! I'm supposed to send... I get an order. I don't question. I send the crew out to go look at these coordinates. And we cut to a family. Mm-hmm. Nuclear family. Mother, daughter, daughter, son. Mother, father, daughter, son. Whatever. They go out... And they find the spaceship in question from Alien. The big horseshoe spaceship. Dad gets down. Dad and mom get down. You kids stay here. Play Angry Birds. Whatever kids are want to do in the future. The mom comes back hauling the dad who's got a face hugger on him.
Yeah.
And then the daughter proceeds to... Ah! We're going to get very used to hearing that for the next hour and a half.
Real quick, but this is the one thing that... Maybe you can clarify this for me, but I just... How have they been terraforming this place for so long and not noticed the ship there?
I mean, we don't know how far these coordinates are. I'm trying to defend this movie. I love this movie, so I'm going to be the apologist here.
Am I being like...
I mean, they're terraforming it, so it's not like you just go wandering the countryside willy-nilly.
But you think there'd be some kind of scout or something.
They're building reactors. They're building a big...
There's a colony.
Yeah, it's a colony.
Hadley's Hope?
I think that's what it's called. Hadley's Hope. So it's not like they just venture out into the wasteland of nothingness, the cursed earth, or whatever you want to call it.
And why would you want to terraform that place? It looks like shit. It's not the most...
Maybe there's, ore there. Maybe there's some minerals, and I don't know. There's gold. There's gold in them there hills. Yeah. Anyway. So we go back to Ripley. She's on the ship, and Burke and some pussy marine lieutenant, second lieutenant probably, he says, hey, all of a sudden... It's been 57 years, but we just today lost communication with LV-426. Dumb luck. So we're sending a platoon of Marines. We want you to go in an advisory capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Ripley, we should say, she's total PTSD. She's got night terrors.
Right, yeah.
She's having nightmares. She has there's a scene where she has a nightmare of an alien about to burst out of her. Night sweats, all that kind of shit. She says, no. Then she has a nightmare, and then she decides, you know what? I'm going to face my fears like a boss.
Right?
So she calls Burke. She's like, I'm in. So she hooks up Burke, Paul Reiser, Ripley, and a platoon full of Marines. They do their cryo sleep. They're heading over to LV-426 to see what's going on. And then we get kind of the awakening from cryo sleep scene that this franchise kind of does quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's a recurring thing.
It's kind of a theme. Yeah, everybody's like, shh.
Which is cool because it's an easy way to introduce the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get...
what a set of characters we have in this gym.
It's a platoon full of Marines. There's a handful of them, maybe a dozen of them. But we get Michael Biehn as Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Paxton as Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Jeanette Goldstein as Vasquez, and Mark Ralston as Drake, and Lance Henderson as Bishop, and a few other people. If you don't know who these people are, whatever. They're awesome people. You should know who they are.
All of them.
So they're having lunch, and Ripley loses her shit when she finds out Bishop is an android.
Yeah.
A.K.A. synthetic person, A.K.A. artificial person, whatever. So, but this android is a little different from Ash.
Yeah.
This android follows Asimov's first rule of robotics.
There you go.
He pretty much says, he says we have behavioral inhibitors. It's impossible for me to harm or by omission of action allow to be harmed a human being.
Hmm.
Do you want some cornbread? I think that's Asimov's second law, that they have to offer cornbread.
Yeah.
Ripley's like, fuck you, Bishop. You stay away from me, Bishop.
Yeah.
Whatever. So Ripley debriefs the Marines, and it kind of goes the same way as a Weyland-Yutani. Nobody believes her.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gives a shit. Hudson, Bill Paxton asks, is this another bug hunt? Which kind of likens them to the mobile infantry of the Starship Trooper, right, of Robert Heinlein's Starship Trooper novels, because bug hunt is like a thing.
The roughnecks.
In there. Yeah, the fucking roughnecks. Oh, we should also say their new lieutenant is brand new. He's very green.
He's had two jumps, one simulated.
They all kind of follow their sergeant, a guy named Apone. He's like your stereotypical assholes and elbows, you know? He's that kind of a sergeant. There's a really cute scene where Ripley, Hicks and Apone, they're going over some manifest, and Ripley's like, hey, I kind of feel like a third wheel. Is there anything I can do? I don't know. Is there anything you can do? And she's like, where I can work that power loader. And then she steps into... what's become a big staple of sci-fi is an exoskeleton
big staple power loader. Of James Cameron.
He does it in Avatar. He does it in Exo Squad. We've talked about that. It's a big thing. Fucking Matrix Revolutions has it. It's a mecha. It's a mecha.
Yeah.
It's a mech. So she walks in. She picks up this big thing. She's like, where do you want it? And Hicks and Apone, they kind of pause, look at each other, and kind of laugh. And they're like, bitch, well, please. But basically, she's kind of won them over.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, she's this consultant on our mission.
She could have sat there and not done anything. And, yeah.
She's kind of won them over, you know? It's a good scene. So they drop down on the planet. We get a shot of the spaceship. It's a miniature. It kind of holds up because it's an actual miniature, kind of Star Wars. The effects kind of hold up in this because James Cameron in the 80s, he liked to use miniatures.
Yeah.
And it kind of holds up. It's a good scene. The drop scene.
Yeah.
And as while they're getting ready to drop, Bill Paxton, he's strapping everybody in, and he's how would you describe Hudson, the character of Private Hudson, played by Bill Paxton? How would you describe him to the audience?
Not the class clown, but I mean, just the boisterous. I don't know.
He's cocky.
Cocky, yeah.
He's cocky as fuck. He's telling Ripley all about the weapon. We got grenades. We got this. He's like, don't worry, Ripley. Me and my squad of ultimate badasses will protect you. He is just cocky as fuck. They do their drop.
We should do a whole episode just on Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton is awesome. Bill Paxton is my shit. They're doing like, it's like a like, people are freaking out. And then Apone goes, somebody wake up Hicks. Look, Michael Biehn has fallen asleep while they're doing their drop. I love that fucking line because you log in on flight hours, you're going to fall asleep during takeoff and landing. It kind of makes you feel like you're a badass. At least that's what I tell myself every time I was sleeping during takeoff and landing.
But this whole everything that we're describing, it kind of sets the relationships and everything up for who these people are. Like, they know each other. This is the thing. They're a crew.
There's, you know? Yeah, we're kind of skimming it. But, I mean, there's a little kid. Like, when they first wake up.
Yeah.
The character of Vasquez, who is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Played by, I said, Jeanette Goldstein. You might remember her as John Connor's foster mom in T2. She was, she was in Titanic, both James Cameron movies. You know, mm-hmm. Once they load the first class passengers, they'll be bringing us up now. And she was in Lethal Weapon, and she hit the gym for this movie. She, as soon as she wakes up, she starts doing pull-ups, but not like the pussy ones where you're like using your biceps. The ones where your arms are facing outward. The man pull-ups. I can't even do those anymore, man. And she's like, oh, looking at her bike. Yeah, she was like Sarah Connor before Sarah Connor was Sarah Connor. Even Mark Ralston's doing the pussy pull-ups. Like she's doing man pull-ups.
She's doing that, and like James Cameron's in the back writing the script for Terminator 2. He's like, oh,
yeah, right. I mean, she might have been the inspiration.
Could have been.
And even Bill Paxton is like, hey, Vasquez, have you ever been mistaken for a man? She goes, no. Have you? And Mark Ralston, like, oh, there's a lot of camaraderie going on there. And yeah,
because the Marines, that's a big part of this movie that I enjoy. It's just, especially Bill Paxton.
Post-military, I buy that. I bought their camaraderie. I liked it. I did like it as someone who is. Yeah. So yeah, so these characters are being established. She clearly, Drake, the character Mark Ralston plays, him and her have a thing. They're really closer. There was a backstory in the script that never made it, but it turns out they grew up together, like in an orphanage or something. Like, them two were close. It, like, it would suck if one of them died and the other one didn't.
Yeah.
So they land on the ground and they start doing their sweep in standard 2x2 formation. They're, you know, scoring. And then we get one of the only glimpses of James Remar playing Hicks.
Oh, really?
He was originally cast as Hicks. Hmm. He filmed some shit.
Okay, I didn't know this.
And kind of like a an Eric Stoltz kind of thing. Like, you know what? He's just not getting it.
Yeah.
Decades later, James Remar kind of said he was doing a lot of drugs at the time and kind of got fired. And James Cameron's like, hey, Michael Biehn, he's my boy. We did Terminator together. Hey, Michael Biehn, this is like Sunday. Can you come to England and start working on an alien movie on Monday morning? And just, Michael Biehn just showed up on the day and just started filming.
Can I say something? I want to say thank you to James Remar for being a drug addict.
I like James Remar, dude, and I think he might have been badass. I don't, nothing to take away from Michael Biehn. Michael Biehn is the shit in this movie.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't picture James Remar in this movie. I like James Remar, but I think I like Michael Biehn a little bit better in this.
He might have been better, and it might have been, but I don't know. Alternate universes. Yeah. Somewhere out there, there's a universe. Fucking, I wish I had Rick and Morty device. I would love to go to the universe where James Remar didn't do a lot of cocaine. This is the 80s. I'm telling you, we said it earlier. It's 80s. It's cocaine time. But some footage of him exists, but it's all from behind, where he's just, like, running in the rain. But some of that, I can't even tell you which one, but some of that is technically James Remar. Fun fact, boys and girls. So they do a sweep of this whole facility. Basically, they just scope out the foyer, and the lieutenant is like, whole facility's clear, let's move in. Like, they just checked the doorstep. But fuck it, Gorman. Gorman's the name of the...
the new guy.
Of the new lieutenant, the green lieutenant that nobody respects.
Yeah.
They do find some facehuggers alive in stasis tubes. And they stumble across the lone survivor, Mark Wahlberg. No. The lone survivor, a little blonde girl, adorable little girl played by Carrie Henn, she's dirty, she's filthy, she's like feral. Almost, she's like... she's like that. But they take her in, and... So they found the one survivor. Then we get a really creepy scene where Bishop is dissecting one of the facehuggers. He's acting really weird. Like, one of them walks up to him and is like, hey, Bishop. And he doesn't look away. Like, Bishop. And he turns to look at the guy and doesn't say anything. And his eyes look almost dilated or something. And you start wondering, are we going to get a repeat of Ash? We don't trust androids.
Right.
We know androids are tools of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Does Bishop have a different agenda too? I don't know. Throwing that out there. So Hudson's working the computers. He gets a hit on the trackers. All the trackers are like, they're like lojacks. And so they're like, oh, they're over there in the reactor. So they send the Marines in. Ripley, Burke, and the lieutenant are hanging back. And Ripley's like, hey, they're in the reactor thingy, so they can't fire their weapons. So they're relegated to just use flamethrowers. So one soldier has to gather all the clips, all the magazines, and put it in a backpack. Carry it with him. So he's a walking grenade. He's a walking accident waiting to happen.
That won't come back and bite anybody on the ass.
That's the only... Yeah, you think? Anyway. But he doesn't even explain to the Marines why they can't shoot, that they're in the coolant sector of the yard. He just says, I don't want any I don't want any firing. Collect magazines. That's all he does. He doesn't even explain why.
No weapons.
Because if he... That's what I call a challenge. No weapons. If he explained why... Maybe Vasquez and Drake wouldn't have secretly reconnected their machine guns. Maybe Hicks wouldn't have pulled out a pump-action shotgun. Which is really weird when you think about it. Because he gives up his machine gun, his A1 pulse rifle, what have you, and then he pulls out a shotgun. He's like, I like to keep this around for close encounters. Welcome to Earth. But I mean, like, this is the future.
Right.
It's like the equivalent... of a guy in Afghanistan pulling out a flintlock pistol. Is like, I like to keep this around on missions. Why does he have a pump-action shotgun?
Revolutionary War rifle.
In the future. You know, I'm just... I like to keep this flintlock pistol handy. I don't know. It seems kind of weird in hindsight. I gotta be fair. I love this movie, but I wouldn't be me if I didn't shit. If I didn't drop little pieces of bird shit.
You're equal. You equal opportunity nitpicker. Yes.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I like that. So they come across a person who's cocooned,
mm-hmm.
and we get sort of similar to what we didn't see. She's basically like, "Kill me, kill me." And Ripley's watching this on the monitor. She starts crying. She's freaking out. She's getting flashbacks of Dallas,
right?
When he was saying "kill me," and then we get a chest burster scene, and then they burn the shit out of it. They take care of a little bit of business, not a lot of business, but they take care of some business. So, basically, long story short, I guess that attracts some of the xenomorphs. They just come out of the shadows. They're like ninjas, man.
Yeah, they're
like
everywhere.
Yeah, you can't see them. They're like Zartan. They're just camouflaged into the wall. They start just wreaking havoc on the Marines. The one cat who had all the they grab a dude, and he lets his flamethrower go crazy. Yeah, he's a highly trained Marines. Marines, bunch of pussies, am I right? I got issues with Marines. I train with a lot of them. They're good guys, but not the brightest. Anyways, so his flamethrower goes willy nilly, and it burns up the dude who had the magazines.
Of course,
they explode.
Right.
Flat lines all around, like half their crew is dead. Everybody's freaking out. Hudson, get the fuck out of here! Hudson loses his shit like nothing, man.
And that's I think from this point on, Hudson is just nothing but
he flips,
nothing but classic one-liners. It's like
everything.
That's
what makes it so funny.
Yeah.
How cocky he was.
Yeah,
because he loses his shit. We'll get back to him later. Gorman, the lieutenant, he just freezes up.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what's going on. Like, talk to me. What's going on? He freezes up because he's a rookie. Ripley, like a boss, commandeers they're in like an APC.
Yeah.
She drives into it. She evacs the survivor's brew. And then we get a little piece of James Horner's score. Great score. Mm-hmm. Great piece of music. It really punctuates the great action in this scene. She pulls out Hicks, Hudson, and Vasquez. They're the only survivors. Three Marines out of however many went in. She pulls them out. She's driving away. Hicks, she's freaking out. Hicks kind of calms her down. Like, you know, you're just grinding metal. Ease down.
Mm-hmm.
He has his hand on her hand. Mm-hmm. It's a little... Mm-hmm. I wish we could play the Brokeback. Because this whole movie is peppered with Hicks Ripley. I mean, talk about shipping somebody. I mean, they set it all up to ship these two people. A lot of little scenes. And we'll get to them. Maybe one of the first ones where he... Anyways. So Hudson, like we said, loses his shit. This ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. Hudson's losing his shit. He's freaking out. They're getting ready to go. Ripley proposes, let's just nuke the fuckers.
Yeah.
Nuke them from the air. It's the only way to be sure. Burke is like, hey, come on. Slow your roll, chief. You can't do that. This is a $1 million facility. This is clearly an advanced race. You can't wipe them out. She goes, I think Corporal Hicks has command here. Corporal Hicks. Come on. He can't make that decision. He's a grunt. No offense. Hicks goes, like, none taken. I say we fly out and nuke it from the air. And he kind of makes out Canto with Ripley. It's on the way to be sure. kind of reiterates what she is saying. She kind of lingers
mm-hmm.
a little bit of eye contact.
It's been a while since I'm sure she's done anything.
So. Yeah. It's been 57 years. So that's just one of many scenes between them. So he calls Pharaoh. You copy? Come pick us up. Pharaoh, the pilot. Basically, there's an alien in the cockpit. They crash. So their jump ship from their big spaceship... It's fucked. We're fucked. she's calling in the other guy. Hey, Spunkmeyer. Spunkmeyer? I just love that name. I don't even want to give him shit. Because it's just fun that there's a character that exists named Spunkmeyer. Anyway, so basically they're stranded on this planet, man. It's game over, man. It's game over. So.
That should have been the tagline.
Yeah, it's game over, man. So they decide they have to take shelter because they mostly come at night.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly. So, yeah.
Did we find out the little girl's name yet at this point?
Because
they don't know her name. And then she's talking to Ripley. And
she tells her name is Newt.
Yeah.
Nobody calls me Rebecca except my brother. But he's dead! My parents are dead! They're all dead!
Game over, man!
Everybody's dead. So they take some shelter back inside. Hudson is still freaking out. Ripley, like a boss, still takes charge. And they have, this is another deleted scene, they have like these remote machine guns, like from Congo. I don't know why they took it out. It's a cool scene, but I guess cut for time. It doesn't really matter to the story. Hicks gives Ripley this little watch. It's like a GPS. And even more sexual tension. At this point in the movie, you can cut it with a knife. It's a cute scene. It's not over the top. Plus, we get an actual smile from Sigourney Weaver, which is nice. She has a beautiful smile.
And we don't get that very much in this
franchise. Not in this series, yeah. But it's nice to see her smile at Ed Hicks. Beautiful smile. Tons of little moments like this. He teaches her how to use the M41 A-pulse rifle. It's great. It's a great sci-fi movie weapon. Great sound effect to it. Sound. Really fun. So Ripley she goes to some old log record. She learns who it was who ordered that exact family to go find that derelict spaceship. Signed, Burke Carter J. Turns out Carter Burke worked for the company, was behind it the whole time.
Get out of here.
These guys just want some aliens, man. They got to get themselves some aliens or they're going to lose their shit. They want it for their bioweapons division. Mm. That's how they always justify it. So basically, Burke is like the Ash of this movie. He's the asshole representative of the company. Anyway, turns out when the ship crashed, it fucked up the reactor. So it's going to explode in like 2 hours or something. So now, again, they got 2 hours to get the fuck out of Dodge. So Bishop has to crawl. He has to crawl through 500 yards of shit-smelling foulness I can't even imagine to get to this remote satellite and program the ship.
I saw that. That was in the director's cut, too.
Yeah. It's a very scary scene where he's in the pipe crawling. I mean, I know he's a robot, but I mean, I
got... Claustrophobia. I mean,
yeah. It's a scary scene seeing him crawl through the shit-smelling foulness.
Because, you know what? One thing we didn't mention about in Alien, when Dallas is like in the vent, he's got an area to like walk around in and everything, and he's got this big flamethrower that I don't know how he's not burning his hair off.
He's got a lot of hair too.
There's like a big flame.
This is the 70s. Yeah. Full hair, full beard.
Yeah. But Bishop in this one, he's like you said, his arms are like tucked in, and he's like
squirming.
Like if an alien got him, he's fucked.
Yeah. Thankfully, he's a robot, because even, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Bishop should go. Hudson's totally on board with sending Bishop. Anyways, so Ripley and Newt, they decide to catch a few Z's. They wake up, and turns out there's a couple facehuggers in the room. This scene's pretty scary.
Yeah.
I guess it's close to horror, you know, in some of the scenes. They wake up, there's some... There's a couple facehuggers running around the room, like that hand in Adam's Family. They're just scampering along.
Or an Idle Hands.
Or Idle Hands. Or Evil Dead.
A lot of
metaphors. The Marines show up. They kill them. And she basically says, Burke did it. And they're about to kill Burke. Like, you're dog meat, pal. They're about to kill Burke. I say we waste him. No offense. But right as that's about to happen, the lights go out. Turns out the aliens have found a way in. Burke is saved by the bell. And then... There was a firefight! Aliens break from the ceiling. Great action sequence, man.
Well, right before that, there's a... I think it's a kind of a slow build. The tension builds up because they have the little plot device, the little radar. The
motion sensor.
Yeah,
the motion sensor. Yes.
And that's just like... As a kid, I remember... Well, not as a kid, but I remember that scene. And you see him just coming closer and closer.
It's like 20 meters. 15 meters. Like five, six, like that's inside the room. That's not
right. Right on top of his man.
It's reading right, man. You're not reading it right. Hicks goes balls on this fucking guy. He goes into the ceiling and shines a light. And you see like six aliens. By the way, we should say there was only six alien suits that they were able to use in this movie. And James Cameron spread the wealth and managed to make it look like an army of aliens with six alien suits. And that, when you think of it, in that shot, we see six. That's the most that we see at one time. The rest of it's all like one or two at a time.
Yeah.
So he knew how to stretch a budget.
God, what can he not do right?
he's a talented filmmaker. He was still young at the time.
That was the big build to the
So we get the action scene. aliens are getting blown away left and right. It's a really cool scene. Hudson finally leaves bitchy Hudson, and we get a little bit back. We get the cocky Hudson that we fell in love with in the first act of the film, where he's like, come on, get some. You want some? I'll live up for you. Yeah, fuck you. He's blowing away left and right. And then,
They get him.
The ground opens up. And they pull him down.
Yeah, you can see the kind of, I guess there's arms coming. Like, alien they drag hands. Him, they drag him down.
It's like Ghostbusters with alien hands. Yeah. With the hands rip up. They pull him down.
Mm. But he's good. I think he goes.
But he goes down fighting. Yeah. You know, that's what makes it hard. Because at this point, we're starting to love Hudson again. We're like, yes, go Hudson. Go Hudson, get some. Oh, fuck.
You can't even make out of this scene.
Hudson!
Come on.
Yeah. That's harsh, man.
I just turned it off after that.
but seriously, I mean, like, in hindsight, of all the deaths in this whole franchise, man, that one got me. That pissed me off. Plus, I already loved it.
We know who. Yeah, you just said we know who Bill Paxton is, but in the franchise itself, there hasn't been a lot of characters that you attach yourself to, or you get attached to. A lot of it's just
no. I mean, beyond Ripley, but so we should, like, Ripley in the first movie. She's a survivor. She just happens by circumstances to kind of be the last one to die, and she gets away. But this turned her into an action heroine.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
The likes of which I don't think has ever been topped. She is arguably the character Ellen Ripley is the greatest action heroine ever on film. Sigourney Weaver got an Oscar nomination for this movie.
Oh, she did.
She did, dude.
Oh.
I mean, come on, dude. That is unheard of.
That is true.
In a sci-fi movie for an action hero like this to get an Oscar nomination? She was... James Cameron, you know, Ridley, you know, he set the stage for it, but James Cameron really turned the character of Ripley into a strong hero. You know, that even in the original Alien script, it wasn't written that Ripley was a woman.
Yes, Ripley was just, yeah.
But that they said we need at least two women in the script, just for gender purposes. Mm-hmm. We need at least two women. And I forget who, but somebody was like, could one of the women actually be Ripley? They're like, yeah, I guess that could work. Mm-hmm. And it was like an afterthought to make the hero, or the survivor, if you will, a woman. But this one, man, Ripley is straight up.
And it's a bit forethinking, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the 70s, too.
Yeah.
But this is, she's total action hero. But she's not too cocky. She just, you know, she's like John McClane. She's just a regular person.
She knows what she's
doing.
Who
was put in an extraordinary situation and happened to come out on top, you know, so to speak. And, this action scene, she's blown... Like, the first time she has her gun, she's been trained, but she never used it. An alien shows up, and she's kind of like, oh! But she blows them away, but she's not comfortable with it yet. But we're starting to see what will become one of the greatest action heroes of our time. Anyways, Bishop's almost got to the ship. He's flying it down. Burke, the douche nozzle that he is, locks them all away. Like, what was his plan?
Right.
Really? I think he was just so cowardly. He's like, I'm just going to hide in this closet for forever. Turns out he hides in a closet with an alien. And he gets his comeuppance. I like to think the alien fucked him in his ass before he killed him. Because fuck this character, man. Anyways, he gets killed, or maybe he goes to get cocooned. I don't know. The point is, he's gone. Bummer. So they're escaping through some vents. It's Ripley, Newt, Hicks, and Vasquez at this point. And Gorman, who has since... rejoin the team.
Yes.
So we're back in these fucking vents again, man. What is it with these fucking vents? They're scrolling through there. Vasquez is taking the trail. She's got their six. She's shooting up aliens. One of them acids her leg.
Her leg, right? Yeah. Her ankle or something like that.
Yeah, she gets acid in her leg, and she gets lost. Corman, who's trailing them, he's like, go. I'll go back, check Vasquez. He starts pulling her back. Mm-hmm. All these guys are fucking 45, but he fights off like two aliens with a fucking 45 until he's out of ammo. Mm-hmm. And then they're cornered from all sides, and then he gets a little bit of redemption.
Yeah, he pulls out a little pressure release, I guess, grenade or something that he's got in his hand, and went out like a, I don't want to say like a boss, but
no,
I mean,
there's only one boss in this movie. We're saving that.
Yeah. No, I mean, he went out. If you're gonna go out, take him as much out as you can. So,
and even Vasquez, like. You always were an asshole, yeah. Gorman. But she says you were always were an asshole, Gorman, but there's affection in it. And he doesn't even say it. He shows her the grenade, like, you down? And she kind of grabs his hand. Like, do it, man. It's a good scene.
Yeah,
they blow up.
Yeah,
they take a few with them. They cover. They covered their escape. Whatever. So Nitwit goes running off like an idiot, gets lost because she's an idiot.
Coral,
damn it, Coral,
stay in the house.
She goes off. She gets kidnapped by some aliens, and then it's just down to Ripley and Hicks. They're almost there. Hicks, protecting Ripley, he gets a chest full of acid, face full of acid too. Mm-hmm.
Well, was it on his chest too, or was it just the face? Okay,
it's on his chest and face, all over his face, neck, and chest.
Okay, yeah.
I had to say it, man. Fucking Kevin Smith's in my brain.
You owe him $20
for that. I owe Kevin Smith $20 for that. He probably has copyrighted face, neck, and chest. So they come out of this elevator, and Ripley is carrying like a scene in a Vietnam movie. You know, she's carrying Hicks over. He's wounded and. So, fuck, Ripley is becoming, in the last hour of this movie, Ripley is becoming this action hero. Mm-hmm. She's carrying the wounded soldier. Bishop has finally got the ship back from their spaceship in orbit. She brings him in, and she's like, we're ready to go, and no, we're not leaving yet. I gotta go get Newt.
Yeah.
Bishop's like in 25 minutes, this whole place is gonna be a smoke cloud the size of Nebraska or something like that. So he's got some good line. She's like, don't leave without me. We're still not 100% on Bishop yet. I'm not sure. Are we?
Not yet.
I don't think we are.
It's not going to be until a few scenes later, or later on in this movie that
She drops off Hicks. She grabs rifles. She grabs flamethrowers. She grabs grenades. Like a boss.
Yeah, okay.
So she goes after another one. They exchange of many sweet scenes. He's like, no, we're not going anywhere. He's like, okay, like, take care of yourself, Hicks. He's like, Dwayne. My name's Dwayne. Ellen. Don't be gone long, Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of linger for a second. And they eye fuck the shit out of each other. Basically, he's like, first, I'm going to get off this planet. Then you're going to get off. if you catch my meaning. Yeah. Bow, chicka, bow, wow. Yeah. These two are going to get it on like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So she takes the elevator down into the under thing, and she finds Newt. Not using the little GPS thing, but because it's been about 5 minutes since we last heard Newt screaming her fucking head off.
Mm-hmm.
So she finds Newt. They're about to get away when they encounter...
another alien.
Another alien? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Not quite another alien.
Mm. A big alien.
A queen.
A queen alien, yes.
The queen.
Mm.
The bitch. A scary as fuck super alien surrounded by in a nest.
Yes.
And Ripley manages to keep her at bay by threatening to fry her up some eggs. But so she starts to back away, and then Ripley kind of welches on the agreement and burns all the eggs up anyway. And then Ripley proceeds to shoot the place up, man. She's blowing up eggs. She's blowing up the egg sack with grenades. She's unloading. She's burning the place. She's tearing this motherfucker down, man. King Kong ain't got shit on her. And then as badass as it is to see, and as cathartic as it probably is for Ripley, though, I'm kind of like, why are you bothering? This whole place is going to blow in 10 minutes. Why are you fucking waste of ammo, man? You know, why don't you save a little bit? Because you're running away with Newt and the alien queen chases you, but oh fuck, I'm out of ammo. Maybe you shouldn't have blown it all on.
I think he answered your own question. I think it was cathartic for her. Like,
she clearly it's getting away from her.
Yeah.
She's just blowing her shit up. But strategically, that's a dick move, Ripley. Come on, man. Save at least one grenade. But the aliens chasing them. They manage to get in the elevator. They find Bishop. He's been hovering around. And then they're getting away just as the colony goes nuclear, killing all the remaining aliens, and they live happily ever after.
The end, right?
The end.
Mm.
Hicks is doped up like a light. You know, Ripley adds a little Viagra to his IV so she can fuck him while he's out cold and everything. And Ripley's giving Bishop...
Is that a thing?
You can rape a man. That's a thing. Put some hydraulics in that thing and turn it... Anyways, it's the future. It's the future. They have all sorts of crazy shit. She's giving Bishop the credit that he deserves. And then, like all the vodka and milk shots he was down in earlier start to come up on him. He's, like, puking. You're like, what the fuck? And then, like, a big alien tail impales him.
Mm-hmm.
And then turns out the queen is still on board.
It's dried. Yeah.
And she just... rips him in half, like mid-torso.
Well, this is when they're back on the... They've already landed.
They've gone away. They're back on their spaceship, the Sulaco.
Yeah. And they landed. They're on there. It's a very calm scene.
Yeah. Turns out the alien... Turns out the alien has managed to stow away on the getaway vehicle again! And Ripley at this point is like, I've had it with these motherfucking aliens on my motherfucking spaceship. So she decides to slip in something a little bit more power-loady. And she decides she's going to fucking fight this alien queen. Fight! Two chicks enter, one chick leaves. And we get one of the greatest lines in cinematic action history, which is...
Get away from her, you bitch!
Oh, God! I just went from 6 to midnight. I'm glad you knew that line. I'm glad you didn't pull a Jamie Kennedy and you fucked it up.
But he, oh, from Scream?
Scream 2? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Timothy Olyphant says, get away from your bitch. And then Jamie Kennedy is like, I think the line is, get away from her, you bitch. No, stay away from her, you bitch.
Yeah.
Point is, Jamie Kennedy fucks up that Scream 2 line. I just want the world to know. Anyway, that thing's been bugging me for like 20 years that he fucked up that line. Anyway, so they scrap. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Ripley's fighting it. I mean, it's 80s technology. It's puppets. It's mechanics. It's real.
Mm-hmm.
It holds up, I think. It's really good. I don't know.
And the physics of it, whenever... Spoiler. They open up the hatch on the bottom of the floor or whatever. Yeah. And kind of like she flips the queen over.
She tries to toss him down
the thing. But the physics of it, whatever, it like...
It grabs
her and she's like... Flips over too, but it like
she topples with it and kind of lands on top of the alien.
Yeah.
So the alien's like, it just took a fall. It's got a power loader on it.
It was very realistic looking.
It looked good. Yeah. So they fall like down an airlock tube, and Ripley's crawling up the ladder,
mm-hmm.
opening the door, or she's crawling up the ladder, and then the alien grabs her foot,
mm-hmm.
and she's conveniently at like a control panel. She opens the airlock because that's how she defeats aliens. She blows them out of airlocks. And
there's something very familiar about all this.
Yeah, the alien gets sucked away, blown into space. It closes. She makes it back up to the surface where Torso Bishop is still alive and Newt. And Newt jumps into Ripley's arms and yells, "Mommy!"
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the metaphor wasn't clear, this is clearly her surrogate daughter, right. which really hits home a lot more with that deleted scene
mm-hmm.
when we learned that she had a daughter who had died.
Exactly.
It makes it all the sweeter. It makes more sense. It was a good scene. I don't know why they lost it. It only took a couple of minutes. But they all, Hicks, Ripley, Newt, and Bishop, they all go into cryo sleep, kind of the way the last movie ended, and they live happily ever after as one big happy family.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, just a really good solid
scene.
Ending. Yeah, right? Solid ending to the movie. Like, and it set up everything perfectly if they wanted to carry on this franchise to another movie. You said it earlier about if Bishop was trustworthy at that point, and it wasn't up until he came back with a spaceship.
She comes up from the under thing
and he was
Newt there. And she's like, she even says like, damn you Bishop, yeah, like he left without her.
Yeah.
And then when the alien's starting to show up again, like, we're gonna die, Bishop, like a supervisor, shows up in the ship and rescues her. And he even says, like, I'm sorry that it was getting too unstable. Yeah. And she's like, thanks, Bishop. Like, she finally trusts him and realizes he had her back the whole time.
And then there's that little, before the impaling later on, there's kind of a one-on-one.
She's like, nice job for a robot. He's like, nice job for a human.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so she's learned to trust.
By the way, I really like Lance Henriksen in this role.
He's great, dude.
Yeah. He was a staple of the 80s for me. But I think in this role, I mean, something about the way he played this android.
It's almost as if Jane Cameron really trusted in how he could play a robot.
Yes.
Well, we talked about a little bit about this. It's the Terminator movie.
Mm-hmm.
Lance Anderson was cast as the Terminator in the original Terminator movie.
Did we talk about this?
I thought we did. Mm. We covered it in our commentary of the Terminator.
Yes, and if you haven't checked it out, go.
Terminator's Genesis.
Yes.
Lance Anderson was cast to play the Terminator.
Mm.
And I think the studio didn't want him, or they wanted someone to... But the point is, the studio didn't sign up, but James Cameron wanted him. So he found a role for him in the movie.
Right.
But clearly, he thought Lance Henderson can play a robot. So he cast him as a robot in another movie. So, you know, so that's kind of fun fact, boys and girls. It's a rock fact. So that was because I feel like you just experienced the movie for itself. It's a great movie. I saw this in the theater like 4 years ago at a draft house with Michael Biehn.
Ah, okay.
He was there doing a Q&A. And the thing is, right before the movie started, I was like, I'm going to take a leak because I have a child's bladder. I go out to the bathroom. I do my thing. I pee. Why am I drunk so much? I go to the bathroom. I'm walking back, and Michael Biehn's standing right outside the theater. Like, he's talking to the patrons, who are the managers, whoever they're doing this. He's like, you're going to go in. You're going to talk this. And I'm like, do I do it? Do I be that guy?
Do I tell him about Pop Culture Rewind?
No. Oh. Well, this was like, I said this like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, doing like Mr. Biehn, like huge fan, I don't know. I chicken out. Oh. I walk back into the theater. Well, because he was clearly the theater management was breaking it down for Michael Biehn, how this is going to run. He was in the middle of something.
Hmm.
Like, it would have been rude.
Well, you don't do it right then. There you wait for him to finish. And then you go harass
him. Hover.
Yeah. You go harass him.
I'm sure. I don't know, man.
You don't want to be that guy.
I didn't want to be that guy. So I just go back in the theater. And he did a fun Q&A at the end of it. And it was really cool. And it was really cool to see aliens in a theater with an audience. Yeah. I mean, when Bill Paxton shows up, there's just applause. People are just like, it's Bill Paxton. It's Hudson. You know, you get that enthusiasm when you watch it. That's why I love revival theaters and seeing old movies with audiences who don't mind the occasional outburst if it's fun or relevant. Yeah, they don't mind it. Yeah, and I was so glad I got to see Aliens a few years ago in a theater.
So did super he? Fun. Did he watch? Was Michael?
He was in the back. He watched it.
Okay. When was it the Q&A before? You said it was
afterwards.
Afterwards.
After the credits rolled, he got on stage with a microphone. He talked like there was like a commentator.
Okay. Like a host, MC.
A host, type, something like that, yeah. And then they did a Q&A.
Oh, okay.
I was tempted to go ask a question, but I was sitting right in the middle, and I didn't want to get up. And
yeah.
Anyways.
Was there anything interesting about the Q&A, do you remember? Or
Sometimes
they're good, sometimes they're bad. I don't know, it just depends on...
It wasn't bad, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head that's worth relaying right now.
Okay.
But we got a lot more shit to get through.
That's
We're only
true.
Halfway done, boys and girls.
Yeah, so... But I do want to say that the Alien and Aliens... for me, those are the top two of this franchise for me.
Really?
Aliens being the first one.
Of course. I would hope.
Yes.
So.
All right, boys and girls. I know at the beginning of this episode, I said this is going to be a two-parter episode. But we're having so much fun talking about this franchise that we went a little longer than expected. So we're going to take a breather for right now and come back next week with part two of our Alien franchise coverage. Talking all about Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man. Now what the fuck are we supposed to do?
After that episode, we'll then take a look at the interesting AVP crossover flicks, and then conclude with our in-depth review of Prometheus.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?
We hope you enjoyed this part, so stick around for the rest of our rewind of the Alien franchise. Oh, and as always, pop your culture.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. Oh, man, that just beats it all.